Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
It's actually more the kind of one-on-one syndication before you get in with the working group, because I think it becomes the politics or the behavioral, organizational behavioral dynamics become exponentially more complex every time you add another person into the room. Because every person you add into the room has different motives, different objectives, different background, different thinking style, come from a different set of experiences in life. And so whatever you're synthesizing or sharing needs to meet all four or five, however many it is, of those perspectives. And so I'm saying the more that you can isolate each variable, right, and say, Jim's going to be one of the people in that room. Let me grab 30 minutes with Jim ahead of the meeting next week to say, hey, Jim, we're going to be talking about this next week. I wanted to get some early thinking from you on your ideas. What are you most worried about? And then maybe I could share with you what I'm thinking to get your reaction to it. And every time I've done that, it has, again, yielded a more thoughtful end product and helped with some of that connection up front. So it's everybody is on the same page before you even walk in the room.
It's your first at bat. You're in the big boardroom. This is your first opportunity to make an impression with all the senior leaders in your organization. And you have to get this right. Here's the problem. In your head, you really don't feel like you should be in this room. You're actually thinking that I don't know anything about the space that I'm in. I don't know all the ins and outs about this. What if I start getting questions that I can't answer? What do? I'm gonna fall on my face. That's what's going through your head. So as you're going through all of this, how do you navigate it? What's the path for you to navigate this successfully, maintain and build on your credibility, and then be able to move forward in a way that really accelerates your career? That's what we're gonna actually cover in this conversation. Today, we're going to talk to Kate Manahan, who is the Chief People Officer at Bus Patrol. They're an AI-powered safety tech company that helps keep kids safe on and around school buses. Prior to this role, she led people and culture at Built Technologies and spent 15 years at Bridgewater Associates helping shape its famously candid, feedback-driven culture. She's a lifelong builder of high-performance teams, and she's also a mom of three, a softball coach, and a Little League board member, making her a chief people officer both on and off the field. Kate, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Jim.
You and I have done a short-form version of this before at a conference, so I'm looking forward to getting a little bit more in the weeds with our conversation. So let's tear the Band-Aid off and have you expose yourself to the entire world and tell us about that time where you thought you got yourself into something that would get you fired.
There's certainly been more than one time I've gotten myself in over my head or thought that I would get fired. But if you're not taking risks, you're not growing. But one in particular moment that comes to mind when we talk about this topic is it's about 10 years into my career, and I had been working on a set of different projects at the time for the CEO of the company that I was working for. And I just finished one and so was a free agent to start another. And she asked me to take on this project in the people space, in the HR space. And what started off as a small project to transform some of our benefits and think about how to better incorporate D&I practices into the company's policies ended up with me being asked to take on our total reward space fully upon the resignation of a couple folks in that area. And I showed up one day and all of a sudden I'm the person in charge. And I thought to myself, do they know what they're doing? Because I don't know anything about this topic area and will inevitably screw it up because I don't know anything about insurance plans or policies or things like this, aside from being on the employee side of it. And credit to my boss, the CEO at the time, she instilled in me this notion of, You don't have to know the answer. You have to go find the best answer. And so went on a mission to build the subject matter expertise and surround myself with experts in order to be able to take that on. But there was certainly an oh shit moment when I think I got my first email and was like, hey, I hear you're the head of this and we have a question. And I said, what have I gotten myself into?
So I hear you describing it, and that doesn't sound like I'm going to get myself fired moment. It sounds more like, oh, I've proven myself for 10 years and now I'm stepping up to a bigger opportunity. So where was the disconnect? Because obviously the people that tapped you on the shoulder to step into the role had faith in you. This sounds like this is more of an in between the ears issue than an actual, I'm going to burn the house down type issue.
That's a very fair point. You could argue that I think for a lot of people, your I almost got fired moment, was it actually an almost got fired moment, or is it in between the ears? Like, how much of us walk around with this notion of imposter syndrome and this idea that we actually are all way more capable than what we realize. And in that moment, like, yes, now several years later, looking back, I think you're right. But in that moment, I personally, at least, felt totally ill-equipped to take on what I was taking on. And that was the first time in my career that I think I felt like I was out on the tightrope and there was no net below me because I was the person in charge and the buck stopped with me. And employees were coming to me and our executive team was coming to me asking questions and expecting answers and decisions. And I think that the moment, there was a couple moments at the very beginning where that happened. I was asked for a recommendation. I was asked to address something. I was pulled into a boardroom. And I think I thought to myself, like, I don't know the answer to this, and therefore I'm going to get fired because I don't know the answer.
There's a ton in your first couple of comments that I want to dig into. I think the first thing that I'd like to get your thoughts on was your comment about, I'm in this role and I don't know anything about it. And the reason why that connected with me is that generally speaking, whenever I've gotten that big step up, and I think this is common for a lot of other people, when they move into a new role, they feel like they have to prove their worth of being in the seat and demonstrate expertise in the area that they're in. So talk us through, looking back, how you overcame that instinct.
I almost want to talk about the setup first, because I give a lot of credit to my manager, who was a wonderful mentor and sponsor of mine through my career, because I think she gave me just the right amount of rope in this situation. I don't want to imply that subject matter expertise doesn't matter. You're not going to have me go fly a plane, right? You don't want me operating on you in the OR. But in this instance, I think putting me into a space where she knew that, number one, I would be surrounded by a team that was able to supplement some of the expertise. And then number two, I had guardrails in the form of her and running things by her and her helping me to learn and to make thoughtful decisions. I think that was a very important part of the setup. In terms of your question about how I navigated it, I go back to the thing I said earlier, which is I think the mindset shift was half of the battle, right? This idea that I don't need to know the answer, but I need to go find out how to get to the best answer. And that could be a couple, there's a lot of different tools in the toolkit to do that. Like one could be a really good framework that you can apply time and time again. And they exist out there in different forms, right? There's Kata at Bridgewater, there's a 5-step process, right? Start with your goal and then the problem and the diagnosis. And so starting with a good framework to pull in information, I think is one tool. I think the second tool is triangulation with experts, right? Knowing who to pull in, knowing how to ask good questions, the 5 whys, keep asking the why to really understand. Third, and maybe it's related to the second, is just being able to research information, right? So while number two was like experts in the form of individuals, the third is just researching information, industry best practices, et cetera. I think in so many instances, you're not doing something that hasn't already been done before. In coming up with great people practices or policies or whatever I was trying to do, I wasn't creating the wheel from scratch, right? There's a lot of great examples out there to learn from. So instead of putting myself through the pain of building it from the ground up, go learn from what other people did and what works well in other companies and other instances and apply that in the context where I was. And so I think the combination of those three things helped me build a structure around knowing what I didn't know, but then also knowing what to do about it and drive towards the right and a good, thoughtful answer.
I really like a lot of what you said there, and it leads into one of the other things that I was going to ask about, which is, you know, you talked about being in the boardroom for the first time and you're starting to get execs questioning you about all sorts of stuff. And I think your quote was, I found myself in a situation where I had to figure out how to buy time or figure out how to get those answers. So let's go back to that moment and connect it to somebody else who might be experiencing that in the near future. When you're in that first step into that big role and you're presenting to the board and you're starting to get peppered with questions that you don't have answers to, and you might have come up through an environment where it's an imperative that you, quote unquote, know the business and you need to know what's going on. How do you buy time in a way that allows you to get the right answers versus just pulling something out of your ear.
Yeah. And when you asked earlier about, hey, the definitive moment where it was like, oh, I might get fired, that boardroom moment might qualify in this whole experience. And Jim, I may have told you this story before, but we'll unpack it. And in terms of buying time and being ready, look, I knew the bar was high. I hadn't yet established a track record. The board knew that I was new in the role and that I didn't have the subject matter expertise. And so I also think knowing like the level of thoroughness and the quality of the answer that you need to show up with to build that track record and build confidence in your stakeholders is a really important part of acclimating into that role. So I spent a lot of time preparing what I was going to bring to the board for the first time. I probably overprepared 10x what I needed to do in that first board meeting, because I knew as time went on, then I could prepare half as much or walk in and know the answer. But that at that moment, I knew that it was a formative moment for my track record. And so I spent a ton of time coming up with my proposal. And another thing that I did was I went to several people I knew were maybe smarter than me or knew more on the topic. And I said, beat this up. Tell me everything that could go wrong. Ask your hardest questions, because that further made it bulletproof or codified my thinking where, hey, if I go to 10 people and they ask me the hardest questions, hopefully once I get in that boardroom, I will have thought about all of the different answers. A lot of time preparing and ready to walk in the room. When I walked in the room, I was met with maybe could have anticipated like skepticism and questions. And I'm not saying that to be judgmental on any of their behalves. They wanted to make sure that the company was making the best decisions. And so it came from a good place. But I walked in and was met with a, why is she here? And why should we listen to her if she doesn't know anything about this topic? And two things happened in that boardroom that I think were, again, very formative and I carried with me through my career.
I like your emphasis on preparing. And I think one of the other aspects of your answer that I really think is something that people need to be thinking about is the level of preparation, but especially from people who can poke holes in your theory or your idea. And the other thing that I will mention that ties into that is now you can actually set up AI adversaries to go through that whole poking exercise too. So anything where you can get the loyal opposition voice to cut up your idea, that's a good practice to make you prepared in those hostile or semi-hostile settings. But you just mentioned that you walked into this and you started feeling some adversarial questions coming at you, whether they were intentional or not, doesn't matter. You're perceiving it as adversarial. And it's probably at some level, it's really adversarial, because if you're from an underrepresented community, if you're first time in a role, if you're a woman in a boardroom for the first time, your credibility is already under question before you even open your mouth. That's mm-hmm. me narrating. That's not you saying it. That's me saying it. So when that started happening and you started feeling that, how did you navigate that situation without blowing everything up?
And we've all been in that moment, and I felt the blood draining from my face and my hands getting sweaty. And there was two things that happened that shifted the direction of that moment of that conversation. And one was external and one was internal. The external one was that person I've mentioned who was my boss at the time, but also a great sponsor of my career. She paused the room and she said, listen, I understand you might think that she doesn't know anything about anything and that she's new to this role and you might have a lot of questions, but you're going to give her 15 minutes to prepare what she has spent weeks getting ready to share with you all. And I've seen it myself and I have validated, I have triangulated it. You're going to give her 15 minutes. And if after 15 minutes, you still think that she should not have the seat at the table, then let's discuss that. But please let her share first and then jump in. And then internally, in that moment, the fight or flight, I remember having this thought of, what do I have to lose? And also, she's right. I know more about this topic than actually anyone around this table. They all might be smarter than me. They might have more years of tenure or more senior positions at the company, but nobody else has spent the amount of time deeply researching this topic that I have. And I have good thoughts to share with them. And I'm here at this table today because of the thoughtful approach that I've taken to this topic. And if I get fired today, I get fired today, but at least I've gone out in a way that I think is valiant, and I put a lot of effort into this. And so I went through my 15-minute spiel, and you can imagine, since I'm still here and talking about it, I didn't get fired, and it played out well.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or by email, and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show. when I put your answer onto a bumper sticker, the question that comes to mind is, who's speaking for you when you're not in the room? In this particular instance, the person who's speaking for you is in the room. So the question that I have is, when you look at building that dynamic, building those alliances and those advocates who are going to go to bat for you and advocate for you, what's the process that people need to be thinking about to cultivate that board of directors within the company or even external to the company that are going to be going to bat for you in situations like that?
Yeah. Someone once said to me, you need a champion and a chance, and then you need to pass it forward. And so when I think about building that board of director, it's who are your champions? Who are your champions that, you know, have a natural affinity towards you as an individual? I think you have to connect with them personally. Who has a vested interest in your success for whatever reason? And who is suitable and capable of helping you based on their background, their position at a company, whatever it might be. So identifying, like you said, your board of directors or your group of champions, and leaning into that, making it explicit, saying, I need your help with this, right? People love helping other people. You have to give them the open door, right? So identifying your group of champions. And then also, and again, depending on where you are in your career, also, who are you a champion for, right? That's the notion of the, and then pass it forward, right? So I think about that all the time. I'm in a position in my career where I've spent a lot of years doing what I'm doing and I'm part of an executive team. I still need champions. And so who are my champions that are continuing to invest and develop me? But then I'm also thinking on a regular basis of how am I mentoring the next generation of people in that boardroom? How am I playing that role that was played for me that day that was so formative in shaping the direction of my confidence and my career?
One of the things that I gather from what we're talking about right now is what we're really talking about is navigating political landscapes within our organization. There's always going to be some of that that you encounter, and your ability to navigate those successfully can have a big impact on how far you go. So if you're talking to somebody that isn't skilled at that, how do they get better skilled at navigating? What are the things that they should be watching for and listening for that gives them cues on how to respond and react?
Yeah. And I know politics and company politics is the phrase that's often used. And I don't know, for some reason, that's always rubbed me the wrong way. It might be true. I like to think of it as organizational dynamics and human behavior and with a backdrop of some psychology behind it. And it's just a matter of, I think, understanding people, truly empathy, like truly a course in empathy, understanding where each person is coming into the room. What do they care about? What are their motives? What are their objectives? And how do you address those, appeal to those, negate those, validate those in a way that speaks to them and meets them where they are? Now that becomes very complex when there's multiple people around a table. It becomes more complex when you may not know them, you may not have a history with them professionally, and you don't necessarily know their motives or know where they're coming from. And so my advice to folks is to invest as much as you can into getting a better understanding of those things. I was actually just talking to someone on my team about this yesterday, and my advice to him was, ahead of sitting down with those five people all around the table at the same time, have you met with them individually? Have you gotten to know, again, their business objectives and those kinds of things so that you can come to the table with something that addresses their needs, their concerns kind of head on?
I like your comment about get to understand them on a one-on-one basis. I think that's really important. What I'm curious about is, how do you bake that into your natural operating rhythm within work? Because it seems like everybody is running on a thin team. Everybody's got a task list of a mile long. And when you're looking at it from that individual's perspective, you're just buried. So how do you carve out the time to build those one-on-one relationships in your standard operating rhythm?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of things I'd highlight. I think it's a great question. One is, I think, just the mindset. Right. If you walk into a conversation with someone and my goal is to get an answer on XYZ or check this off my checklist versus use every conversation as an opportunity to learn more about that person and walk in with that as the mindset. And yes, a secondary outcome is we need to make a decision on X. Number two, it relatedly is ask a ton of questions. Right. If somebody says, hey, I think I'd do it that way. Interesting. Why? What led you to that decision? What's some of the logic behind that? I just want to understand the way that you think or the things that you were weighing and how you made that decision. And try and almost expose the thinking that actually led to the decision. The decision is easy. They say it, right? It's the thinking that you want to get at because that really exposes where they're coming from. And then third, I would just say make it a priority, situation dependent, right? So if you're about to walk into a boardroom with a really important presentation that's carrying a lot of weight, consider explicitly doing syndication ahead of time to pull out individuals' thoughts and thinking before getting in the room. That might not always be possible, but when I have something really big that matters a lot and I'm going to go have a conversation with four people about it, I always try and say, can I get a preview of the things they care most about or how they're going to react to my proposal before I get in the room with all four to make it even better and to make sure it's addressing all of their needs, questions, concerns?
It almost sounds like what you're describing is creating like mini work groups for a problem that you're tackling. Is that the direction that you're going with that, or are you talking about something else?
I think mini working groups, it's actually more the kind of one-on-one syndication before you get in with the working group, because I think it becomes the politics or the behavioral, organizational behavioral dynamics become exponentially more complex every time you add another person into the room. Because every person you add into the room has different motives, different objectives, different background, different thinking style, come from a different set of experiences in life. And so whatever you're synthesizing or sharing needs to meet all four or five, however many it is, of those perspectives. And so I'm saying the more that you can isolate each variable, right? And say, Jim's going to be one of the people in that room. Let me grab 30 minutes with Jim ahead of the meeting next week to say, hey, Jim, we're going to be talking about this next week. I wanted to get some early thinking from you on your ideas. What are you most worried about? And then maybe I could share with you what I'm thinking to get your reaction to it. And every time I've done that, it has, again, yielded a more thoughtful end product and helped with some of that connection up front. So it's everybody is on the same page before you even walk in the room.
So one of the things that I'm thinking about as you just described your first at bat in the big boardroom and you start feeling people starting to poke at you, my immediate reaction in that sort of scenario, and I think this would be accurate for a lot of people who are first time in front of the big room, is to start getting defensive and counterattack. How do you navigate those sort of feelings and still justify being in the room without actually turning it into a situation where it's argumentative or hostile?
Yeah. I love that question because so many times I have seen what you're describing, the dynamic you're describing of the defensiveness, and very rarely do I see that go well, but I agree with you. It's the first inclination. I actually think it's incredibly important to demonstrate a certain level of humility. Now, humility doesn't mean lack of confidence or insecurity, but a humility around knowing what you don't know, right? And willing to hear others' opinions. And I used to talk a lot with folks about this balance of assertive and open-minded, right? And you need to find the balance in the middle. If you're too open-minded, right, you lose your internal compass of your confidence and your conviction in this answer that you spent weeks and weeks researching. If you're too open-minded, if you're too assertive, your inclination is to defend, right, and be combative. It's finding that right balance of the middle of, I know what I don't know, and I'm here to hear your thoughts, but I also have my decision or my recommendation for a reason. And so finding that intersection and the willingness to show up with humility, I think really goes a long way.
I like everything that you said. And I think the part that it connects back to is your advice on asking questions. When you are feeling whatever you're feeling in your head, a good way to zoom out is to ask what people mean by the things that they say, and that's going to give you clarity. It might, sometimes a question is just a question. Actually, most of the time, a question is just a question. And taking the time to zoom out instead of perceiving it as an attack is probably, is really good advice. And the way that you actually do that is to be humble in those situations and not take it personally. When I look back at where this conversation started in your big moment in front of the board and people start trying to poke holes in what you're saying, somebody goes back. We've already gotten tidbits of things that you gathered from that experience and how that actually moved you forward in your ability to navigate those situations. So it's been an ongoing conversation about, okay, what did we learn from this? But when you look back at that experience and you spin that forward, what were the two biggest things that you pulled out of that experience that you feel are most impactful or would be most impactful for somebody that's actually listening to this conversation?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think I take it back to the two things that happened that day, the external and the internal, and just put a point on those for someone listening, because I think you need to have both. So one, I think you need to have that champion, or you need to have someone to help guardrail you. And maybe they're not physically even in the room at the moment, but they've spent time helping you prepare or whatever it might be, or they're willing to vouch for you and your credibility. And so I think it's one, knowing, again, who your champions are, who your sponsor is, and someone to help you make it the best outcome possible. And then the second is that internal piece, right? The confidence. And walking in knowing that you're wildly capable of more than you think. I moonlight as a little league softball coach for my daughter. And one thing I tell every girl when she gets up to bat is, you are wildly capable. And I make them say that to themselves before they get up to bat. Because every girl walks up to the plate and thinks she's going to strike out. And if you walk into the boardroom, if you walk up to bat and you think you're going to strike out, you have a higher chance of actually striking out. If you walk in and think, I am wildly capable, you show up with that energy and you put your best foot forward. And sometimes you will strike out, or sometimes you'll swing and miss, or whatever it might be. But I think showing up with the right mentality is half the battle. And I think lots of times, and especially it's research, women in senior positions and women in boardrooms and those things need that kind of internal monologue and confidence to be able to show up well.
I really like how you map that out. Now let's look forward. So you went through all of those experiences and you learned a lot from that, both from how to navigate internal dynamics, organizational dynamics, and also how to build a network of advocates around you. When you think about how that experience helped you hit fast forward on your career, what are some of the big ways that it actually helped you accelerate your career in leadership?
It made not knowing so much less scary. And the reason why that helps you accelerate is when you stumble across something you've never done before, it's, oh, look, something new. I have a recipe for how I'm going to tackle this. It's the, as we talked about earlier, the frameworks, bring in the experts and do the research. So in my career, the first time I ever had an acquisition, working for a startup and we were going to acquire a company, I had never done that before as a people leader and I was the person in charge, but it wasn't scary. It was exciting. And certainly I applied other things that I did in those other situations. I over-prepared and made sure I pressure tested everything, but was able to tackle that. And then the next thing. And also before you know it, you have then built a set of experiences on your resume and in your career that you can continue to compound on. And it has that exponential effect. Once you've done a few of these, you recognize the flight patterns and know how to apply the same tools in your toolkit to just new and different topics every time.
I want you to think about this entire conversation that we had. And I want you to focus, I'd like you to focus on that person that is taking their big step up, maybe taking their first big at bat, going with your softball conversation. And you're helping them build a framework of navigating that sort of circumstance successfully. What are the key things that they need to have in place to successfully manage a situation like you faced and then come out the other end with a big success?
One of the most important things is laying out your strategy or your plan. And lots of times I think people rush to the doing, right? Because as you said earlier, people want to prove themselves and have impact right away. So they rush to the doing. And I think that there's a lot of value in outlining upfront what you're trying to do and how you're going to do it. And again, there's a lot of existing frameworks out there that can help with that. I think starting with what's your North Star or your goal, the highest one that you're trying to achieve. A level down from that, what does that look like? What are the objectives that sit underneath that North Star goal? And what does that look like if you've achieved it? And then what is your plan to get there? And the plan consists of a lot of things. And there's a lot of devil in the details there. What are your resources? What is the team to do it? What is the project plan to achieve each of those things? And depending on the size of the goal and the context is how big or small that thing is and how granular or theoretical. So it's hard to get super prescriptive, but I think just starting with what are you trying to do and really knowing what that looks like at the necessary level of granularity and how are you going to do it?
Kate, really good conversation. I'm sure people are going to want to pick your brain about these sort of things even after this conversation. What's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
I'm on LinkedIn. Feel free to reach out and send a message. I'd be happy to connect there and talk more with anyone who's interested.
When I think about this conversation, there's a few things that I want to call out. One is the fact that it's okay to be in your head. And the reason why you're in your head in those sort of situations can be tied to the same thing if you've played any sport. It's those pregame jitters. The reason why you're feeling those things is because there's a certain amount of fear associated with it, but that fear is driven by expectations, that there are things riding on this. And actually, the moment that you should be really afraid is when you're not feeling those things. If you're feeling yourself going into the room and you're not afraid or not anxious about the outcome, that means that there's probably some big holes that you haven't thought about that that might create some exposure. But the other thing that is important about this conversation that you had is that as I'm thinking through the conversation, a lot of what you described really centers into your mindset crafting your own reality. If you're walking into a room and you feel like you have to defend everything and you have to create a fight, you're going to be naturally leaning towards creating a confrontation instead of a collaboration. So be aware of what your mindset is. And it ties back into one of the things that you mentioned in the conversation, that you're capable of more than you think. And oftentimes we undersell ourselves in terms of our capabilities. And that is what actually leads us into problems, is underestimating ourselves and getting in our heads and really downplaying what we actually know, which leads us into a lot of different problems that we could easily avoid if we had the right mindset. So I appreciate you sharing all of that with us. For those of you who've been listening to this conversation, if you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a review, and then make sure you tune in next time where we'll have another leader who will hang out with us and share with us those stories that in the moment they thought would wreck their career, but actually ended up being the catalyst for helping them fast forward their career journeys. Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.